Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Small Biz Talk Radio. I'm Lori Leiker with Small Biz Coaching in Austin, Texas. I focus on businesses from startup through to 5 years and from zero employees to 100. So it's kind of a small niche, but, you know, we can make it happen for you. Today, our guest, I'm really thrilled about this, is Gina Catalano. She is the author of Tandem Leadership, How Your Number Two Can Make You Number One. Welcome to the show, Gina.
Thanks for having me today, Lori. It's a pleasure to be here.
This book, I read it a couple times, and it's a fascinating way of approaching a business-type book where you're trying to teach a lesson. It's actually a novel with a point, a business novel with a point, and that is that you don't have to do it all yourself. How did you come up with this idea for the book?
A couple of things. Part of it, I mean, a lot of it is semi-autobiographical from my experience working as a number two for a number of years. In my early days, I was a number two. And I started working with clients a little over 5 or 6 years ago, and I realized that CEOs really liked to have me help them, but I needed some easier way for them to kind of get the lessons and to understand the concepts I was teaching, and that's how the book came about.
So the book follows Marcus, as he takes over his uncle's business, his uncle Jake's business. He's trying to do it all himself. He's changed the name of the company, and doing it all himself, he's killing himself. And it's his uncle, who had been in business for years, who really kind of hones in on what he needs to do. What are some of the things that you're seeing small businesses? What kind of mistakes were Marcus making that you see small businesses making today?
I think the easiest thing is that at the beginning, especially when you're starting a company, and this is what I focused on in the book, is that you know, the enthusiasm and the excitement and the passion that you have for your business will last you a really long time. But if you're growing, and that's the goal, right? If you're growing and you don't spend time starting to figure out how to put a supporting structure in place, you'll burn yourself out and you'll start missing opportunities. And a lot of the people I work with are either responsible for the sales or the creative or the ideas part of the business. And what I find a lot of times, if they get really burned out, that part starts to dry up. And they need to figure out a way to rejuvenate and to get some resources to run the things they don't like to do, especially in a growth environment.
Do you also find that a lot of small businesses, small business owners, especially at the startup, they think that they have to do everything, so they're spending a lot of time doing things that they're not qualified to do, but they think they have to?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, I think a lot of it's necessity. I know for myself, I do a lot of things. I don't do as much of my own. I've outsourced some things. Like, I'm fairly technical, so I'm pretty comfortable doing some of the things on my website. But I also realized one day when I was trying to figure out something that should have been really simple that I had wasted maybe 3 or 4 hours doing something that somebody else eventually could do in an hour. And when you start actually tracking that, how much time it's taking you to do some of those things, you start realizing that you're really wasting money. Because if you're not making sales or creating products and nobody else is doing that, you're sending some money out the door.
Yeah. And so, you know, one way that I usually tell clients is to look at how much time they're spending trying to do something and figure out how much their hourly rate is. If you can find somebody to do it for you at less than your hourly rate, then you're doing well.
Exactly. And actually, I even take it one step further. It's what I call the value of your time, not the rate, because a lot of times in the beginning, a lot of entrepreneurs or business owners choose to not take a salary because they're throwing it back into their business. And I say, so if your business is, say that your business is supposed to be $1 million and you're the only salesperson or you're the only product person in your business, then you're really responsible for $1 million worth of sales. And so your time isn't really worth the $50,000 that you might be collecting or the $20,000. It's really worth $1 million times divided by however many hours you want to work. And when you start dividing it up like that, it's not how much you're being paying yourself, it's how much you're worth. And that starts making a $15 or $20 an hour investment seem a lot more palatable, because you can't make that $100, you can't make that $200 an hour or $300 an hour time investment for yourself if you could find somebody for $15 to do something that, like, ship something out the door or something like that.
What do you, one of the things that is critical, though, if you're getting someone else in, and this is kind of the point of your book, is making sure that you've got a really good number two person.
Right.
In your book, this was through a referral. What are some things that business owners need to figure out, do first before they start looking for their number two person?
That's an awesome question. What I have owners do, or CEOs do, is I ask them, if I can get them to do this for a week, it's awesome. If I can get them to do it for a day, I'll take that too. But basically, I have them track their time and what tasks and activities they're doing over a course of a week, and then take a look at those things and divide them up based on what are the basically three questions. What are the things only I can do, like nobody else could do because it's the special sauce of the company? What are something that somebody, say you have people in your company, what is something that somebody else could do? And what is something else that somebody else could do that I may not have hired yet? And oftentimes when we start, I usually have people put those up in Post-its and we fool around with them. When we organize them, we find out that really they can really hone in on the top anywhere 3 to 10 things that they really like to do and they're really good at it and they're really special at. And then it's the rest of the stuff that they might have been doing that somebody else really could do. And from those, we put them in buckets. We call them buckets and determine what makes the most, what's the next critical step for finding. So sometimes it might be an assistant. And I don't know if you found this too. It might be just an assistant or somebody to answer the phones or somebody to take the orders. Or sometimes it might be somebody to really run the back of the organization, depending on how sophisticated or how much help they need.
And one thing that I've found for a lot of my clients that works well is virtual assistants.
Exactly.
Because then it's already vetted. You've got somebody who someone else has looked at, and you know their qualifications, so that then you can interview them after they've already been interviewed.
Right, and I think contract work today with so many people in the virtual world and even contractors. I mean, if you wanted to hire a virtual bookkeeper or a virtual CFO or someone to do even sales calls or to do customer service, so many things you can do virtually, not even just the assistant part, or as a contractor. To find out if they're culture fit, especially in the beginning, if you haven't had a lot of experience managing people or supervising people and you're really an idea person, it's a really great way to test some different people out to bring onto your team.
So what would you suggest in terms of, I mean, when you're bringing in somebody new, one of the things that a lot of us struggle with is the fact that, well, the best way to put it is that we have these habits from the time we started our business. And I find with my clients, a lot of times, they will they will start their business and then they're reluctant to make any changes at all in how they're doing things, which as a coach and a consultant is difficult because then all of a sudden you've got a client who's unsuccessful. So you need to make sure that they're willing to change habits. How do you get around that with your clients, getting them to see that they need someone else and they need to start changing the way they do things so that someone else can manage it?
When I start working with my clients, most of my clients want to grow, or they either want to grow or they want to sell their business. In either one of those instances, we've really defined a strategy for them that they've agreed to, and we've oftentimes come back to on a fairly regular basis. So in either of those circumstances, we've also identified what that looks like for them. So, for example, if they've decided that they want to grow their business to, say they want to grow their business three times to what it is, I actually work with them to paint the picture. I say, this is what it's going to look like. This is what your day is going to look like. This is what your after day is going to look like. Like in the book, we kind of, you know, Marcus figured out that he wanted to be able, for an example, he wanted to be able to coach his kids' baseball team and spend more time with his family and start working out again. So that was part of what his future looked like. And having that future defined helps somebody grow to where they want to be. What I find when we run into trouble is if they say, I want to grow to $2 million, and they want to grow to $5 million, but they have absolutely no idea what that looks like. If you have no idea what it looks like, you typically don't want to do it. You don't have any big, I call it the big why. You have no reason why you want to get there. And so that's when people come back and often sabotage what you're doing with them. And I've had to learn that lesson the hard way, unfortunately, where I can't get them unstuck. It's because they have no place to go.
Well, and that's the problem. They can't see it tangibly. They can't see how their life is going to be and how their life needs to be in order to grow.
Exactly.
And one
exactly.
of those things
and I
is
think
getting
it's,
the second
that's, I
in
think
command.
As coaches, yeah, as coaches, I think it's our job to help them paint that picture because sometimes they're told they should grow. I mean, I don't know how often you run into this, but they're thinking that they should grow, and they really don't want to because if you paint the picture, help them paint the picture of what that would look like, they're like, well, I don't really want a business that big. But they think they have to. And so it causes a conflict for them.
One of the things that scares them about growing their business that big is because they think about how it is now with them running the business by themselves. Then they think about it growing, that they're still going to be running every single facet of it. It's easier
exactly.
to make them see their company as bigger when they bring in the second in command.
Yes. And so to get them paint that picture, that's why I like to identify the things that they really love about their business, the things that really turn them on or they're excited about. Because if they can do, a lot of times what happens, I can use my own example for me. There's things in my business that I don't really love to do. So what do? With some of those things? I procrastinate on them or I put them to the bottom of the pile. And when I do that, I get into trouble sometimes. And if those are the things that I want to find somebody else to do for me. And what we do is try to define that new person's position so that those are the things, and find somebody who loves doing those things, right? Because their enthusiasm for their stuff is going to be, it'll be contagious for the stuff that you like to do as well.
Right, exactly. So finding that person, though, and starting out small, I mean, you don't have to have a COO if your company is just a small social media marketing firm, or
Absolutely.
That's just you. You don't have to look at hiring a COO, but your strength is in manufacturing and product distribution, and that's
Right.
kind of your niche. where do you find the, as startups, let's just go to the very beginning, as a startup, where do you find the biggest disconnect when somebody's bringing a product to market and then has to make this mental adjustment that they're going to have to get more people involved?
I think at the end of the day, it's who you're serving. What I found is that people, especially if they're product creators, they're really passionate about their product and their whoever they're serving. Especially if they're good at it. If they're good at it, they're like, I'm doing this because I believe strongly in helping my customer or my client. And so I like to, when my clients get a little too, oh, I don't want to do this because it's going to be hard, I'll say, so if name your favorite client. So then they name me their favorite customer, their favorite client, or their favorite product. What happens if you can't deliver that to that person? When you get it down at that really personal mm-hmm. level, because I found a lot of my clients, they're like, they'll jump through hoops for their customers. They'll do their favorite customers, they'll do anything for. And when it gets back, I said, well, what happens if you're so busy, filing paperwork with the IRS, I'm just going to use some example, but doing something like that, that you can't deliver your services. How does that make you feel? And a lot of times it makes them feel bad. And I said, so mm-hmm. you're going to have to get over your own uncomfortableness. Think of that person. Think of that person that you want to help. And that typically, and they'll always come back and say, I know, I got to go help that ideal customer. I'm like, yep, you gotta become the person that's going to be successful with somebody helping you help them.
So with that in mind, is there any difference in impact between a manufacturer that is stuck and a smaller business that's stuck once they get out of that?
I don't think so. Truly, I think you may have different needs, and I think honestly, the way the startup environment is these days, it's a lot easier, again, because what you said earlier, I think that's just super astute about the ability to use virtual and contractors, but at the end of the day, what we're all doing is we're trying to serve a client or a customer. We're trying to make somebody happy. We're trying to solve somebody's problems. Whether it's giving them a physical good or it's giving them a service or it's giving them advice, at the end of the day, we're trying to help somebody. For me, I feel like I'm a big solution provider, and the clients that work for me, they feel similarly passionate about their businesses. And I think I spoke with one of my clients yesterday, and she's getting ready to bring on – she's pretty small, and she's bringing it ready to bring on a second in command at a higher level. She had somebody before at an administrative level, and now she's working at a higher level. And the thing that we decided is really important is we talked a lot about what she wants the culture of her company to be when she adds another professional person into her climate. And I said, that's really important that you've identified it specifically. And we talked about the words, about how she wants to serve her clients or customers, to make sure that that person and she are in the same ballpark when they're talking about things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that defining that vision, defining those conversations are so important. But again, it's
Absolutely.
Another step that is missed. It's missed by a lot of entrepreneurs because, again, they want to go back and do things the way they've always done things. So let's say maybe they were an HR person or a manager at another company, and the tactics that they used worked well for that other company, but now they're on their own in a totally different environment. You can't then translate those same skills into a small business where perhaps your better bet is to take full advantage of the gig economy and get a bunch of contractors that you can interchange and use for different things. And when they're done, and they're gone.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. I mean, I think that when you've come from a bigger company and then you go start your own company, and I have clients that have done both. I have clients that have come from bigger organizations and started a smaller company, and then I've had people that have always had small companies. And the one thing that I notice is, to your point, is that I think sometimes people really underestimate how having infrastructure, how much that helps you when you were doing your job in a bigger company. All of a sudden you're in your own company and you realize, hey, I am the IT guy, I am the janitor, I am whatever, you know. And I think that knowing that you don't have to have a big department is a really good step in understanding that you need to flex to what your needs are. And you have to be really close to your customer and make sure that you're giving them what they need, too, at the same time.
Well, I'm setting up processes so that when things come in, you're not solely responsible for everything. You've got a process in place so you're not panicking.
Right.
Which I'm a business process coach. So that's kind of where I come in and help companies that are starting out or even companies that have been in place for a while. They're using processes that worked in bigger companies or in different types of companies, and they don't work on an individual or small company basis.
Exactly. And I think they can, I think after a while, sometimes, like I was talking to another client last week and we laughed because I said, you know, I kind of let you make some mistakes. I saw some of the things happening, but I needed you to make that mistake more than once, because if I would, after the first time, you weren't going to listen to me anyway. And so, you know, there is something about people figuring out that this isn't working for me anymore. And sometimes I call it I'm almost at the edge of the cliff and almost ready to jump off before I'm willing to do something different. And there's nothing wrong with that, because I found a lot of times those people are the quickest people to adapt once they get to that point.
Right. And when they get to that point and they're not adapting, that's when businesses go under. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many small businesses go under, is this lack of adaptation. They're not willing to adapt.
Yeah, and I think in evolving and being in the whole idea, I think a lot of my clients, and I don't know if it just comes out of the continuous manufacturing environment, are very much into process improvement, because they're always trying to figure out how to get the cost down of their product. And so, mm-hmm, I think there's kind of a natural thinking, there's got to be a better way to do this. But again, they find a better way, and then all of a sudden one day, they need to do it again. And that's why having another person or people in your team is super helpful, because they'll see things differently than you do. And to embrace that's really, mm-hmm, important.
Having a coach on your side, someone who is there,
absolutely,
to help you but is not going to mince words, even having a coach as a second set of eyes on your business can help with that.
It is. And, you know, my clients, a lot of them will say that what they like about, well, I'm fairly direct, so that's definitely one reason, but also the accountability factor. You know, just, it's been proven in studies that our brains play tricks on us. So you can set a goal for the month, and then you can get really close, but you didn't quite make it. And so it's not easy to say, well, you know, I was sick for 3 days, and so I had 3 days less that I could do sales or something like this. So in your mind, we can justify that it was okay that we didn't make that goal. I make my clients pretend like I'm an investor if they don't have investors, and they have to present their case, because the sooner they get that way, the sooner they can hold themselves accountable as well as those people who work with them.
Mm-hmm. And being accountable, not just to your clients, but to your business, is so important.
Exactly.
With freelancers, and especially freelancers and small businesses just starting out that don't have products, one of the hardest things is getting them to realize that they are a business. They're not just doing this just for fun. They are a business. And so they have to start,
right,
thinking like a CEO, not like, hey, I've got a barn, so I'm gonna hold a play. I'm gonna do a musical in my barn because it's there. You're in business to make money, and you've got to nurture that, like you are the CEO of a multi-million-dollar corporation.
Right. Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about the book. Where can people find your book?
The book is available on Amazon, Kindle. It'll be actually in bookstores next spring, June 20th, I believe, or early summer. If anybody's interested, any of your listeners are interested in getting a free copy of the book, they could go to my website at tandemleadershipbook.com/free, and I will be happy to send them a book because I think the book is a great way for people to start thinking about doing things differently.
And talk to me a little bit about your venture solutions. You are a value builder advisor. What does that mean?
I am part of the value builder system. John Warrilow, who wrote the book Built to Sell and The Automatic Customer, which basically he's identified the 8 top values that you can build in your business when you want to get it ready to sell or if you want to make your business better in general. And I am a certified value builder. So if people are interested in finding out what they found when they've surveyed over 25,000 companies in North America, and basically what they've identified are the key attributes to make your business successful. And it's a free score, and you can get a score. And when you improve that score, it improves the value of your business, basically. And I work with companies to help them improve the value of your business in addition to helping them work adding a number two person. Not surprisingly, adding a good number two person makes your business more valuable. So because you're making it less dependent on you. So that's one of the things that I do as well.
Yeah, and it helps with succession planning because if you're going to be getting an investor, they want to see a succession plan.
Absolutely.
And they want to see what your 3-year and 5-year goals are for your company because investors don't want to be there all the time. They want to have an exit strategy as well. So if you've got somebody else in the business with you, then they see that you've got a succession plan, they feel more comfortable investing.
And if you have a family, you know, I've told people too, even if you have no desire to sell your business, but if you have a better business in place, heaven forbid something happens to you where you can't work, or you're not there anymore, then your business still has a value. Because for most of us, our businesses are one of our most important assets. And having that be able to be sold or have a monetary value if you're not able to work is really important as well.
Well, and again, it goes back to the thought that when you are a sole proprietor, when you are a small business, you are your business.
Exactly.
So how do people find you at Venture Solutions?
If they can go to my website, which is venturesolutionsus.com, or email me at gina@venturesolutionsus.com. I'll be happy to answer any questions that they have or keep in touch, and I'll send them some more information about – I have some handouts and some worksheets that help people when they're starting to work on adding someone to their team, and I'd be more than happy to send those to them.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Gina. I appreciate you being with
us
today. Lori,
thank you. It was a pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. We've been talking with Gina Catalano, the author of Tandem Leadership, How Your Number Two Can Make Your Number One. If you'd like a free copy of the book, go to www.tandemleadershipbook.com/free, and you can download a copy of the book from there. I'm Lori Leiker with Small Biz Coaching. You can find me at smallbizcoaching.net. You can also find me on Twitter, smallbizcoachtx, and on Facebook, Small Biz Coaching. Thank you so much for joining us. Come back again next week. We've got another great guest, and we'll see you then. Have a great week.